Mini-episode 851 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 851. I'm FDH managing partner Rick Morris, here to introduce the latest incarnation of our series recounting our greatest guest moments. This one from mini episode 751 to 850. Today we take a look back at conversations with a number of American originals during that time frame. Bob Barker, Jesse Ventura, Eric LeGrand, John Bastow, and Chidi Ahanotu. The breadth of our conversations with these guests continues to reinforce the credo of the FDH Lounge as the show where nothing is off topic.
There was a great story in the Wilkes-Barre Times Leader, and I know that some other publications have written about this. The approaching anniversary, 60 years to the date, of what will go down as the first pre-recorded show in TV history, Truth or Consequences, getting to do that. And I was reading about that. I was kind of amused when you were talking about the circumstances of it, of having to do that from the Pacific Coast at like 8:30 in the morning and an audience that wasn't properly into it at that hour. And it's something you'd prefer to do with a midday crowd. And about the handicaps of doing the show at 8:30 so it could be 11:30 on the East Coast. That was kind of interesting as I was reading about that. And, again, a big piece of TV history that you were a part of there as Truth or Consequences really kind of revolutionized TV in that way.
Well, it certainly did. And you're right. We were doing Truth or Consequences live at 8:30 in the morning. And this was my first national show. And no one knew who Bob Barker was or anything about him. And we were doing it here at I can't remember the name of the building now. It's still there, and they've changed the names about three or four times. But in any event, in the marquee where we were doing it there at this theater, on the marquee it said, "Free Donuts and Bob Barker." And that was when I was first doing the show. After a few weeks, Ralph Edwards told me, "Well, you're my man, it's gone splendidly, and you're here to stay." And I said, "Well, then, may we please change it to Bob Barker and Free Donuts?" And so I got top billing over the donuts, and that was my first step into stardom.
Bob, that's something the rest of us can only dream about, is getting our name above Free Donuts on a marquee. I'm not there yet, but I hope to be there one day.
Well, it took time.
Yes, nothing happens overnight. I do want to get your thoughts. I mean, this is very, very timely, and I know that you have made some comments recently here on finding some similarities, seeing how Donald Trump leveraged some of what you did in your campaign for governor of Minnesota in 1998, and perhaps a little bit of the pro wrestling shtick as well, since that's something that he'd been around for two WrestleManias as a host, one WrestleMania as a participant. But I want to get your thoughts on Trump, some similarities that you see to what you've done and what you stand for, and some key differences.
Well, the first major difference is that I'm a true independent. He ran in the Republican Party and thus became a Republican. So when you're getting Donald Trump now, you're getting Donald Trump Republican. When you got Jesse Ventura, you got Jesse Ventura complete independent, no one pulling his strings, didn't take any PAC money, only spent $300,000, and didn't spend any of my own money to get elected. And so there are vast differences between Donald and I. I actually related more to the Bernie Sanders run, I think, because I was taking $50 donations, no PAC money, and all of that, and calling for campaign finance reform way back in 98, screaming for it when I ran because I saw how unfair it is. And, you know, But I will say this, when Trump first echoed that the elections are rigged, he's correct. They truly are, and in multiple ways. First of all, we now have our second president who's been elected, and the opponent got more votes, which
right.
I think that's absurd. In no other elections in this country can you get the most votes and lose, except in president, and now we had it in 2000 when Al Gore got 500,000 more votes than George Bush did, and Hillary Clinton actually ended up getting more of the popular vote than Donald Trump did. And I love that people are protesting, because a lot of it has to do with that. There's a movement now to abolish the Electoral College. I've been for that for decades. Get rid of this thing. It's ridiculous that we don't elect our president like we elect our mayor, like we elect our governor, like we elect our senator or congressperson, you know. And but what Trump and I do have alike, probably a great deal, is that I never used a prepared speech when I ran. He seemed to shoot from the hip and say anything he felt. I don't think I quite offended the amount of people he did. I didn't get into going after particular races or particular genders and all that stuff when I ran for governor. I hit them on controversial things, like I remember way back then. I talked about the legalization of drugs, and I talked about the legalization of prostitution, two things that absolutely exist in our society, but we keep prohibiting them, and we keep keeping them on the prohibition chart, which is stupid in a free society. Things should be dealt with like adults, not prohibit things, because when you prohibit things, they don't go away. They're just ran by criminals from that point on. And so Trump and I had our similarities, and Bernie and I had our similarities, but the big difference was I still remain a complete independent. Both of them now, to me, Bernie's a Democrat and Trump's a Republican, and my war has always been against both political parties. When I ran for governor, I didn't even say my opponents' names usually. I said their parties and ran against their parties and will continue to do so.
In a way, in talking about your childhood there and all the time that you spent there, it really sort of now kind of represents both halves of your life, doesn't it? The before and the after, the before of when you were out there and being an athlete and being able to leverage it in that way. But now the bigger purpose in life that you have, and, you know, the difference that you're making in so many people's lives and really kind of providing a legacy that's going to live on even well beyond you, the park and some of these other matters really seem like ways to just kind of cement that legacy and keep paying it forward in the way that you've inspired so many people by doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they always say it takes a village to raise a child, and there's no truer statement than it has with my township. You know, growing up with the kids that I grew up with and the family members that helped raise me to keep me out of trouble, you know, playing with a bunch of older kids definitely got me tougher, you know, as I was growing up playing the game of football for sure. And now, you know, like I said, to have a park named before me, you know, after me, for before my childhood, for all my memories there, but also to put things in there so I could actually go there and enjoy myself with my nephews and, you know, hopefully, one day with my children. And that's the reason why when I first got hurt and we were looking to rebuild a house up, I said I didn't want to leave my hometown. I want to stay in Avenel. So we knocked down my old house and rebuilt up a new house here because I didn't want to leave the people.
Absolutely. And allowing you to stick around and bathe in that kind of environment, let's just be such a wonderful thing. And I'm curious also, too, because, you know, there's a lot clearly that's being done, whether it be through the foundation, through the book that you put out there, you know, to be able to tell your story in your own words. There's a lot that's being done for other people and trying to benefit from that. But I'm curious how much it's doing for you, because in terms of the whole kind of process of coming to grips with what happened, is that a big part of what has helped you remain so positive, is knowing that you have the opportunity to give back to other people, to inspire them, to help fund research through your efforts? How big, in other words, is this a part of your own ongoing, you know, psychological recovery from what happened to you?
It's everything. You know, That's a perfect way to explain it, you know, what you just did, you know. Being able to give back, and yesterday was 6 years since my injury happened, the day of October 16, 2010. And, you know, just to reflect back on what I've been able to do, starting up a foundation, being able to write a book, you know, winning numerous awards, but none other feeling better than being able to go to schools and corporations and businesses and anything you think of and share my story with those people and have them look at me like, wow, like I really don't have it that bad, and make them look at life a little bit different, appreciate life a little bit more. You know, that's what it's truly all about, and getting the feedback from that, you know, from the people that reach out afterwards or even beforehand and tell me what an inspiration I am and how I help them out. That's what it's all about, you know, helping other people out in their situations, handling adversity in life and making them better people in this crazy world that we live in. So that's what it's all about. And it definitely sits at home with me and makes me want to go on with what I'm doing. And I'm going to tell you about some more business endeavors that I've started up in the future.
The wrong envelope was out there, and we saw a fiasco for the ages, my friend.
I'm sorry. Did something happen? Did I miss something? What exactly happened?
Yeah. No. I didn't mean to drop any spoilers on you.
I couldn't believe it. I was watching it as it was going on, and I was just like, oh, my God, Warren Beatty, just Steve Harvey'd the Oscars. But actually, that wasn't the case. It was, as you just pointed out, an accounting error in the sense that that somebody didn't read the wrong name. They were given the wrong card and the wrong information. So I'm sure heads will roll.
Well, the funny thing is, I had just seen Warren Beatty on TV the prior day in a very lighthearted moment, just in channel surfing and going by the Spirit Awards. And I have seen my favorite comedian, Nick Kroll, and one of my other favorite comedians, John Mulaney, were co-hosting it. And they were doing their opening monologue, and they're looking through the crowd at some of the celebrities, and they're doing a thing like, oh, there's Annette Bening. Oh, and there's your husband with you. Oh, and you say, he's in the entertainment business too. Oh, you know, so they're having like a lighthearted moment. And I'm reflecting back on that thinking, Warren Beatty, for all the momentous things that have happened in his career, would end up having one of the biggest days, not on the good side, the next day. But as you said, not really his fault. And again, I was breaking this down with a friend of mine earlier in terms of the video of it. He turns to Faye Dunaway, and it is totally unclear that he is committing to the moment. She's the one that blurts out who the winner is. He's looking at her like, what do we do? What do we do? And she sort of, you know, seizes the agency from him and runs with it.
Completely. You think it looked like a little bit of a bit gone wrong at one point, you know, because it's like a long pregnant pause, and you're thinking like, well, one of them forgot what they're supposed to do in this bit. And then all of a sudden, you know, she blurts out the answer, and I'm like, well, what was the bit supposed to be? That wasn't actually funny. But, I mean, that's what happens on live TV. You get caught in the moment, and you don't know what's going on. And then everybody else is basically making their own scenario about what's happening, and you only find out later, oh, Lord, look at that. But when you actually saw that it wasn't a bit, and you saw that when Jimmy Kimmel came on stage and was talking, you know, they were giving the Oscar to Moonlight and everything, I thought, oh, this is a bit about Steve Harvey. They're trying to make something really big at the Oscars. And I'm like, and I said, this is sort of in poor taste. And then you realize it's real. Oh, Lord. It's just like, I was just, I was completely verklempt. And I just said, well, you know, Taraji P. Henson looked really, really good. So that's the upshot of the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. But this is something where, again, if this had happened on any stage, right, if this had been, you know, say, local community awards at a theater or whatever, and the video went on YouTube, it would become viral. Like, this would be a big thing if it was that. If this were a lesser award, and I don't mean to diminish any of the awards, but lesser in terms of public acclaim, shall we say. If this was for, like, cinematography or best key grip or whatever, and they screwed it up, it would be huge. This is the main event. This is the thing at the end of the show. This is what everybody's been waiting for the whole time. I was going back to the movie Rat Race, which I really love. There's that sequence in there with Cuba Gooding Jr. where he plays the inept referee who botches the coin toss and gives the ball to the wrong team that scores in overtime. It would be as though that happened in the Super Bowl for something like this. It is just hard to overstate. You got to think it's almost 1,000,000 to 1 to have something like this happen with arguably the biggest award that's given away every year.
Oh, 100%. I mean, this is like winning the lottery for comedians, pretty much. Because anytime you have a moment like that, all the eyeballs are hyper-focused on you. Everyone is looking at every little detail with the ultra-magnification on it. So you never think anything's going to go wrong, because even if the slightest thing goes wrong, somebody's going to comment. Everybody's going to have an opinion. This just like – if somebody just like shit the bed. It was just unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was. And it's one of these things where here's something where I'll drop a little knowledge on you, John. Not necessarily useful knowledge, but funny knowledge here. But something from the great world of pro wrestling, which we talk about on this show from time to time. They call it the Dusty Finish. It goes back to the 1980s. Dusty Rhodes, when he was the number one good guy star in World Championship Wrestling, and he was also the booker. You know, like, he couldn't give himself the world title a lot of times. So what it would be is he would win the title, and then, like, later on it would be like, oh, but he was disqualified before it happened. And, like, he ran that finish so many different times and basically killed the territory. But it was like, oh, you think one guy won, and then you found out later on the letdown of, like, oh, no, it didn't really happen. So there was a lot of Dusty Finish commentary online because people were recognizing that as something that they had seen before, John.
Well, I think I'm going to tell you one thing about this with everything. I think it's going to make Best Picture, the Best Picture winner, in this case Moonlight, even more memorable. And I don't think that, you know, anything better could have happened for Moonlight, which is a movie that is like the little engine that could, in the sense of like being a very, very – a movie that was produced on a very modest budget – and wasn't actually seen in mass like a lot of the other movies and, you know, just about all of the other movies were. But because of, number one, the fact that it actually won so many awards and won Best Picture at the Oscars, but especially because the eyeballs were all on it because of this fiasco and this, you know, craziness that made it even more hyperbolized in the media the day after. Nothing, there is no PR vehicle that could have been a better thing for that movie. Nothing, in my opinion.
A question I want to put to you. This is something that we're doing now on the show with our football experts, trying to get some perspective. First guy that we did this with was N.D. Kalu a couple months back, and he gave a really, really outstanding answer. And what's interesting in looking at your bio is that it kind of ties in here, because it's a philosophical question about the defensive side of football. And the advances that we've seen on the offensive side with the spread and everything like that. And the shorthand version of my question is, when we get the Mike Martz of defense in the NFL, what's that going to look like? Interesting to me, I look at your bio, you actually played for the man as a head coach. So you understand the mind that he brought to the offensive side of the ball, particularly in the advances that he made there. And again, I'm not putting everything on him. I understand it goes further back, you know, Mouse Davis, June Jones, Jerry Glanville, et cetera. I mean, he wasn't the first guy to do spread-like things. But it's just a shorthand kind of a thing here. I don't think we've seen the kind of innovation defensively that you saw from that kind of school of thought offensively. If we get a defensive guy in the league that's doing something like that, what's your best guess on what that innovation might look like?
Okay, well,
just give me anything. I'm really interested.
Well, no, I mean, I sit up late at night drafting and drawing up those kind of defenses all the time. No, I'm just playing with you. that's very interesting, and I believe you're right, you know, that guy hasn't come about. I mean, honestly, I have spent some years since I retired trying to push a certain defensive pass rush scheme that I was using in my last years in the league. And you wouldn't believe how hard it is to get people to sit down and just take a look at something. I mean, I played 12 years in the league, and I'm talking to people who I know, you know, not just some random coach. But it's very hard to get guys to sit down and look at it. And it's a lot of politics. I still haven't understood that side of the ball yet. But I have been trying to – I had my own little madman
what they used to call Mike Martz. They used to call him.
I know what you mean. Weiss, I can't
wacky,
think of it.
They called Sam Weiss Wacky Weiss.
Wacky
called,
Weiss.
Yeah, they called Mike Martz the Mad Genius or something. I can't remember what they used
Mad
to call
Genius.
Him.
Yeah, I think
name.
That was it.
Yeah, yeah. So I had my own version of that for the defensive pass rush that I actually got an opportunity to present to the Buccaneers coaching staff, the head coach, Dirk Cutter. He gave me an opportunity to kind of hold court in front of the defensive coaches and himself before last season.
Okay.
But he hasn't employed it yet. But
I won't press further on the specifics.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you what exactly it is, but I do believe that I'm on to something with what I have created or devised, and that you're right. I mean, that's the next stage, like the mad scientist for the defense, and to evolve the defense to a different game, you know, because essentially, you know, the game is kind of, you know, spend the same for on the defense side of the ball for generations. I mean, there's some tweaks here and there, but, you know, for the most part, the defensive side of the game is resembles, you know, what they were doing in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know. You know, like I said, there's some tweaks. I don't want to, you know, take too much
right away
from the evolution of the game. But I'm saying the basics of the defensive structure is kind of still the same, you know.
Right.
And I think what that would look like, to answer your question in a long way, I'm taking a long route to answer your question. I think it would look crazy. You know, I think it would revolutionize. I mean, I think you're talking about different – prototypically different type of players playing on the front seven. I think it would take a different scheme where you may have totally different alignments that quote unquote aren't structurally sound as far as defensive fronts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what prevents the defense from evolving like the offense has, because the offense has a luxury to experiment more than
right
the defense does. You know, the defense, you know, you throw some crazy front out there and it gets gassed for a 70-yard touchdown, you know, there's going to be heads rolling on the chopping block for that.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And then you got to justify why you did it, you know. And then
right
you're basing it on something that goes totally against football norms. So, but, you know, it's going to take somebody daring, you know, a Bill Belichick type that has that
right
leeway, you know, from their general manager and owners and willing to, you know, invest in that coach for the long haul. And I think that's what it's going to take, you know.
Keeping in mind, you know, that this is a show where we talk all topics, really, and hundreds of hours under our belt, you have convinced me, you and Andy Kalu have convinced me, this might be the greatest question in the history of the show based on how you guys have answered it. I mean, I think it's outstanding just that, like, you can't fully elaborate on that because you've shared it with Dirk Cutter and they might still use something. So that is so perfect. That was part of your answer, that you've thought about this in that kind of a way. I'm going to tell you what Andy Kalu said, and you react to this. He said he thinks it's going to be a thing where you have three down linemen up there, more or less taking up space, and eight guys behind them that are really kind of pretty amorphous. But the definition between linebackers and defensive backs is going to be blurry. And the way that we're disguising coverages today is going to be nothing compared to what's coming. Guys will actually be literally interchangeable among those eight guys. So how plausible do you think that might be?
I think that's very plausible. I think that's definitely very plausible. That's kind of direction the NFL's going now.
Right.
As far as the linebackers looking like linebackers are looking like strong safeties, you know, free safety type athletes, smaller, quicker athletes. So I think that's definitely plausible. I don't know about that front three that he predicted, with the front three just kind of just taking up space. Because the thing is, I mean, I don't care what defense you are in, if you're not getting pass rush or even pressure, right, that defense is not going to succeed.
I don't want to characterize him inaccurately. I think he meant more or less like the way we view defensive linemen in the 3-4. I don't want to mischaracterize what he was saying. Like in the 3-4, you know what I'm saying? Like you can get pressure from them, but you're not counting on it as much. Does that make sense? Like in the 4-3, you're more expected to get pressure from the defensive linemen.
No, yeah, okay. Yeah, I understand. That's definitely plausible, you know, and I think that's where the NFL's kind of, you know, going that direction as it is, you know. So, you know, you might see more of that.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.